Bible into German. And here we have Dante writing a great piece of literature in Italian, okay, before Petrarch, by the way. A lot of the literary themes are older, new, to poetry, becomes deeply personal in some cases. Themes vary. I don't know if there, how much, there, I haven't read a lot of medieval poetry. I don't think people wrote a lot of poetry in the medieval time period because it was probably seen as idleness, okay, as a waste of effort and time. But here we have love poems, Shakespeare's sonnets, right? The Northern Renaissance. You have John Donne's holy sonnets, and they have a religious theme too. In the classical tradition, they are structured. I mean, you know, like the sonnet, right? You know, the Shakespearean sonnet is iambic pentameter, meaning there's 10 syllables in every line with alternating unstressed and stressed syllables. And there's exactly 14 lines. And the rhyme scheme is always A, B, A, E, C, D, C, D, E, F, E, F, G, G. Petrarch wrote sonnets also. Iambic pentameter, but A, B, B, A, C, D, D, C, E, F, F, E, G, G. I think that's how we ended them. But a form, right? Because the Renaissance period, they're you know, back to the idea of just being interested in the mathematics of form and space, and you're going to see that in the architecture too. Theater, okay? Some of Shakespeare's plays are fairly secular, set in recent past. I mean, Hamlet, set in Denmark. Romeo and Juliet, set in Verona, right? But then you have Julius Caesar. Okay. In fact, one of the few quotes you probably know from Julius Caesar, Caesar didn't even say, is from Shakespeare's play, Et tu, Brute. And you as well, Brutus, and you, Brutus. As his friend is stabbing him, along with all the other guys. Caesar didn't say that. Caesar's last words were probably gurgling on his own blood. Yeah.
We do.
And I have a bunch of notes on Renaissance, and Greek theater. If you want to see.
I would. Right now, I got to keep moving along, though.
Victoria.
Like I said, it is a Renaissance. We have a new civilization. I'm. By the way, as you can see with this, I have a lot of reinforcing what I said before. That's why I don't want you to be stressed out if you feel like I'm moving along too quickly. I'm trying to connect everything. It's new because of the vernaculars. It's new because of commerce, okay? New business, new trade, the way people make livings, okay? It's going to lead to new social classes, new economic systems, urbanization. Notice, please, when we talk about new commerce and new and urbanization, things like that, do not think that, I mean, now Europe is urbanized. Or that now everybody's involved in business for a living. I mean, maybe nowadays, Europe is urbanized and people don't work on farms. When we talk about these are new things, the average person was still a farmer. The average person still lived in a rural atmosphere. But the changes begin here. And you start seeing increased urbanization and increased levels of new commerce, but they have not yet overtaken European life. You have new science, a new world view, a new view of our place in the universe. Literally, a new view of our place in the universe. The Earth isn't the center of the universe. I mean, metaphor and a little. Looks like I didn't hit enter. Politics. You have new forms of government. It wasn't possible for an absolute monarch to exist in the Middle Ages. Okay, you have parliamentary systems. You have all sorts of different things going on in the Italian city-states as they try to experiment with a form that will work, because they keep having all these civil wars and problems. That, by the way, is going to be Machiavelli's dilemma and why he writes The Prince, because he wants to bring order to Italy, which is in chaos. Heck, Dante had been... He was born somewhere. He ended up being banished, I believe. And he had, you know, these rivals from other places, and he puts them all in hell, in the Inferno. It's funny when you read the Inferno. You read about, you know, recognize, like, oh, I know that guy from history, or, okay, obviously, Judas Iscariot is in the worst part of hell. But who's this guy? Just some guy. Guglielmo de Baracano. And you turn out, you read the footnotes, it's like, oh, this guy bullied Dante in third grade. And so Dante will, like, get his revenge on his enemies by putting him in hell. It's awesome. It's cyberbullying before the internet. You have new families, okay? The nuclear family starts to take form. And perspectives on children changes. And you read also that perspective on marriage changes. The age changes and the utility of marriage. Now, this is where we first start getting things like the idea of romance. Okay? Not for John Knox.
Yes, not for him.
He was not a very romantic fellow. And it's new because religious unity is out the window. Now, the one thing that stayed the same throughout the Middle Ages was the Catholic Church was a unifying force. Politically, socially, you know, even economically, perhaps, with the rules that it set on banking and so forth. But now that the Catholic Church has been, not broken, but diminished in its power, and parts of, areas of Europe aren't under its control anymore, there's going to be new things that happen. One of the things the AP exam asks you to look at in every unit is demography and disease. So I thought, well, hell, I'll just make a slide, demography and disease. Again, demography, we're talking about what the people look like. And when we're talking about just a chapter here, in Europe, obviously we're still Europeans. There wasn't much migration from continent to continent going on. Okay? Because of seafaring and trade,